Good morning and welcome to our AA meeting for Planet FM 104.6. My name is Sally and I am an alcoholic and I will be chairing our meeting this morning. Would you all like to help me open with the serenity prayer?
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Our first speaker this morning is Nav, and I'm going to pass over to Nav now, who will share on his experience, strength and hope.
Good morning. My name is Nav and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 26 June 2019 and my home group is Park Bench, Thursday night 7 p.m. in Auckland. My experience, strength and hope. I am one of those, I think, who was an alcoholic right from the start, because I remember having my first drink at the age of 12. I'm not one who comes from a background of alcoholism in my family. I don't have any alcoholics in my family, and I generally come from a very well-to-do background. And I didn't really start drinking until sort of my university days. Almost through high school, we didn't have a very big drinking culture. But I do remember the few house parties we had, and I always drank more than I needed to. At that time, it didn't seem like a problem. And when I started university, I was, among my friends, the one who always got more drunk or who always got into more trouble or always drank more. And that pattern continued. Initially, I didn't think much of it. It was everybody drank and I just drank a little bit more than the others. It didn't sort of start becoming a problem a bit later when it started affecting my studies. I was one of those students who came on a scholarship to New Zealand and really didn't finish my qualification and had to go back. And I was always lucky to get good jobs, but I could never hold on to them. I lost my first job due to alcoholism, and then I lost my second job due to alcoholism. I knew there was a problem with my drinking, but I just didn't know why I drank the way I drank. It wasn't until 2006 when one of the companies I used to work for, and this is in Fiji, not in New Zealand, that my boss found AA and gave me an ultimatum that I should go to AA or else he was going to, or else I wasn't going to have a job. And when I first went to AA, there wasn't much awareness of AA in Fiji, and the people that were there were four American expats. Each of them had over 25 years of sobriety. So I was one of the first locals, not one of the first, but I was one of the locals that joined them. And when I first went into AA, I think I was happy to find what my problem was, that I was an alcoholic, because I had this question all my life, why I drank the way I drank, and AA answered this question. And the concept of it being a disease was a good excuse for my drinking. I stayed sober for 2 years with that AA group. And that was because once I stopped drinking, life seemed to start getting better and things were going well. But I dragged my feet in doing the steps, especially step four, where I got stuck, and I got stuck with it for 2 years. And after 2 years, I relapsed, and that started a cycle of one rock bottom after the other. We talk about yets in AA, and a lot of people have said that they haven't got there yet. In my case, I've been through a lot of yets. I had a car accident where someone died. I ended up in prison. I lost a whole lot of friends. I've lost count of how many jobs and apartments I've lost. I lost a very close family member of mine. And, you know, after every rock bottom, I would think that I would stop drinking this time. And for a while, I started thinking that AA didn't work for me because I gave it a go once. And it was only because for AA to work for me, I needed to work for AA. And I was not willing to do those steps. And I always thought there was probably an easier, softer way. And I tried everything under the sun. Psychologist, psychiatrist, hypnotherapy, religion, you name it. And I tried everything. Nothing worked. And I kept hitting one rock bottom after another. And even after everything, after the accident, after coming out of prison, I promised myself that I wouldn't drink. And that promise lasted sometimes a few weeks, sometimes a few months, but I would always go back to drinking. It wasn't until 2019 when I'd been kicked out of yet another apartment. I'd lost count of how many places I'd been kicked out of. I was out of job. I was in debt. I had more drink and drive charges. I was at a point which they call the jumping off point, you know, where I didn't want to drink, but I couldn't stop drinking. And I was at a point where I was ready to kill myself. It was only through the intervention of my sister who lives in Sydney and came to rescue me. She was here within 24 hours of my losing my apartment and trying to kill myself. And she got me into an accommodation, which was a transition house for alcoholics and addicts. And that's where my journey started. When I came into AA this time around, I guess I'd literally lost the battle. I'd lost the will to fight. And at that point, the surrender, I suppose, came really easily because there was nothing else left. I tried everything under the sun to control my drinking. And there was that illusion that one day I'd be able to control my drinking. Life was in tatters. You know, literally being homeless. And one of the requirements at the place I was staying was that I attended AA meetings. And that's what I started doing. About that time, I'd pretty much lost all my friends. All my families didn't want to have anything to do with me. And towards the end, alcoholism became a very lonely existence. And I think one thing that attracted me back to AA was the people in the rooms, that camaraderie, that support and understanding that I got in the rooms. And that's what kept me coming back. And this time around, I guess I had come to the acceptance that step one, which we need to do 100%, finally dawned on me that I was an alcoholic. And I could not drink, and that my life was completely unmanageable. My best thinking had got me to this place. And I guess my journey really started from there. And one thing I did was, for the first time in my life, held onto AA with both my hands and did everything that was suggested. My second meeting, I asked somebody to be my sponsor, and I pretty much started doing the steps from, you know, day one. Part of that sort of transition into sobriety, I went through rehab and really got some good tools for my sobriety. But it was through AA, you know, that I was able to keep my sobriety. And it's surprising sometimes, or strange looking back where I was 4.5 years ago and what my life is today. I have, my life's turned around 180 degrees. I've got a good job, I've got a good life, I've got a good place to stay, I've got friends, I've built relationship with my family, and it came down to three simple things, you know, admitting that I was an alcoholic, believing that there was a power greater than me that could restore me to sanity, and working the steps, and then eventually helping others. And that's my experience with AA. And, you know, I do this one day at a time, and I continue to do this one day at a time. So thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning, Nav. I would now like to invite Vicky to share with us.
Good morning. My name is Vicky and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is also Parkbench, Auckland. My relationship with alcohol began from a fairly early age. I think I remember having my first drink at about 13 while staying out at the beach with friends, and of course drank to get drunk, which is what I continued to do throughout my drinking history. I didn't come from a family where drinking was a big thing. My mother kept a fairly well-stocked liquor cabinet, but was always fairly well-stocked because she didn't really drink. When I was 16, a couple of friends and I filled up big cordial bottles full of mixed spirits, like rocket fuel, I guess, and ended up binging on those. And that was my first experience of trying to get into a police disco, and ended up in the back of a police car, and then in the drunk cells, and then in the hospital, and then just really carried on from there. Drank to, you know, binge drank for the next few years, and then I went away to train to become a nurse, and was still drinking, and everybody drank, and it was just part of our culture. But I think I found drugs at that point too, so I'd drink and I'd drug. And when I finished my training, I couldn't get a job in New Zealand, so I moved to Australia and made sure that I mixed with people, moved in with people that had the same kind of drinking habits that I had. My first flatmate, when I went to look at a flat, at, you know, it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon and he was drinking scotch, and I kind of thought, oh, this is the place for me, and kind of lived my life like that. And ended up getting pregnant with my first child and moved back to New Zealand and just carried on with my drinking. Got a job at the hospital, and I drank, and I drank in moderation, and I binged, and I never really thought I had a problem. I always hung out with people that drank the same level that I did. And then I got married and had another child, and my relationship eventually turned violent. I was married to an alcoholic, and because his level of drinking was way beyond mine, it let me live with the delusion that really I wasn't that bad after all. You know, and I at that point I smoked a lot of weed and I did a lot of prescription pills, and that I when I look back now, it was really so I could convince myself that I wasn't an alcoholic, because I didn't need to drink as much when I did other substances. And when my marriage finally broke up, I moved to Auckland, and I guess it was the first time in my life that I'd I'd really experienced loneliness, and I'd left all my friends of 20 years, you know, plus behind me, and didn't really know anyone, you know, but my mother and my sister in Auckland. So my new best friend became vodka, really, which I, you know, would drink on a daily and still not really think it was a problem. You know, I had somewhere to live, I had a good job, my friends and family were all still talking to me. I got into a relationship fairly quickly and moved up the coast with someone that kind of isolated me, and he didn't like my drinking. You know, I was a daily drinker. I'd finish work, stop at the supermarket, go home and drink, and he didn't like that. So I ended up, you know, thinking, oh, I couldn't stay in the relationship and not be and be sober. So I stopped drinking and ended up with an intravenous opiate problem for about 7 months, which eventually led to me losing my job. It was the first time I'd lost a job, and being prosecuted. And I stopped nursing. I stopped doing the thing that I loved. You know, actually, you know, drugs and alcohol had taken away what I considered my vocation. But my ego was so huge that rather than, you know, try and fight for my career, I just gave up and moved into a different sector, and carried on, you know, moved up, had good management jobs, but just kept drinking. I'd have periods of sobriety. I'd kind of look at all the empties in my wardrobe and under my bed and wherever they were, and think, oh, maybe I should stop for a while. And so I'd, you know, cold turkey and white knuckle it for, you know, 6 months, 9 months. And but eventually something, people, place, thing would occur, and I'd start again. And every time it just got worse and worse. And then, you know, I lost my first job because of alcohol. And I still didn't really, you know, I mean, I just really didn't think I had a problem. Like, I thought I could stop. You know, I was always kidding myself. You know, I used to say, oh, this will be the last bottle, or I'll just go tomorrow, or, you know, I'll tip out half a bottle and then just drink the rest, but then I'd buy another bottle. You know, it just didn't really click. I'd go around to see my mother and there'd be AA pamphlets on the coffee table, and I'd just look at them and ignore them, and then when she wasn't looking, throw them out and just become belligerent, because how dare she, you know, tell me not to drink. And then finally I agreed to go to an AA meeting. You know, Mum knew someone that was 30 years sober, and he took me along to an AA meeting, and there were like probably 50 people there. I thought there were 5,000 people there. You know, everyone got up the front and they stood at this pelmet and they all just went, oh, hi, my name's Bob and I'm an alcoholic. And I just thought, you've got to be kidding. You know, God was plastered all over the wall, and I just thought, I'm not doing God. You know, I used to say God chased me out of the rooms, but actually it was my ego that chased me out of the rooms, because I thought everybody was just mad and I didn't need, you know, the help of a bunch of crazy cult members. So I just carried on my merry way. I didn't really go back. I went a few times and just to continue to white knuckle and whatnot. And then I had about 2 years of sobriety up, and I was working in the sector, and I relapsed, and I relapsed badly, and I denied that I'd relapsed, and got suspended from my job, and, you know, had to wait for blood tests and all sorts. And knowing what was coming, I didn't tell anyone. I woke up feeling dread every day. The only thing that would stop the dread was more alcohol, you know. And eventually the hammer fell, and that was kind of it. And I just carried on. I was in the midst of a horrendous relapse. I didn't have an hour sober. You know, I'd pass out. I'd come to. It wasn't, you know, going to sleep and waking up. It was simply passing out and coming to. And eventually my mother said to me, I can't do this anymore. You know, if you carry on, then that's it. You know, I'm done. And, you know, I've got two children and I've had a fractured relationship with my eldest child, but my mother has supported me all my life, 100%. And the thought of not having her in my life, I mean, she's in her 70s now, was kind of the crux for me. So I went into treatment, and the biggest thing that treatment did for me was it brought me back into AA. And AA is where I found my people. It's where I found my home. It's where I was able to tell my deepest, darkest secrets and no one judged me. And, you know, little by little, I discovered that that word God wasn't so scary anymore, you know, and it was okay to actually hand my will over every day, because when I'm in charge of my life and when I'm running on my own free will, my life is completely unmanageable. And I will pick up a drink. And if I pick up another drink, I will die. You know, so I've done the suggested things. I've, you know, got myself a really great sponsor. I've got a pretty amazing home group. I'm doing quite a bit of service. And I'm going to do my return to nursing starting next Wednesday. I haven't nursed for 9 years, and it's, you know, it fills me, it fills my heart with absolute joy. It was something that I never thought that I would do, and what AA has given me that back, you know. I mean, treatment led me to the rooms, but it's the rooms that keep me sober. It's the people, and it's just being part of something greater than myself. So I'm a grateful alcoholic in recovery, and I'm extremely grateful to AA. Thanks, Sally.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It's been so great having both of you, Nav and Vicky, share with us this morning. That is all the time we have. And I just want to mention that, you know, for anyone out there listening, if you seem to be having trouble with your drinking, or if you know of someone struggling, or if your drinking has reached a point where it worries you a bit, you might be interested in the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. So if you want to find out more information or speak to someone directly, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the AA website, which is aa.org.nz. We'll now close the meeting this morning with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
We can lay under the sun, like it's your idea of fun. Let it glisten on your skin, sun-kissed melanin. Get away, excite the sky.
my pride down south. Home to mommy and daddy. Instead of crying in taxis, I'll be crying while the TV's loud. I will sell all the clothes that you took off my body, but right now they're in a bag in my house. I can't get rid of you as much as I try to. You're like this growing, never dreading doubt. Maybe in the morning I'll be better. Once I sweat you out like it was just a fever. But you intoxicate me, complicate the way I sleep at night. It wasn't what I wanted, baby. It was better. Whatever. Other on the street, you will whisper to your friends not to come here again, cause I make it so awkward when we meet. I'll keep trying my best not to draw your attention, but I like it when you're looking at me. I can't help it, I'm obsessed with you.